Dylan and Dylan, the Georgia High School Basketball Podcast. I am Kyle Sandy, the owner of SandySteel.com, and with me today, as always, is Ramin Forgani, producer and moderator of the podcast. Ramin, the high school basketball season is over, sir. It is over.
Yeah, it was some really good finals were played. Lots of teams played tough, played hard in that final championship game. I thought it was a really good championship weekend at UGA and Georgia Tech, I guess week extending to the weekend, but the 2016-17 season is over.
Yeah, it's hard to believe, but we just want to put a nice little ribbon and wrap up the season with the bow tie on it, literally and figuratively, I guess you could say. So let's give a quick rundown of all the games and just a quick little recap to let people know what they missed and what our final takeaways are.
I guess we'll do it in chronological order. The first final championship game that was played was the A public girls game at the University of Georgia.
That was Pelham versus Telfair County. I said all season long, Pelham was hands down the team to beat. And the Hornets proved me right. It was a little rocky start. It was 8-5 to open up the game. Telfair was on top. But Pelham ripped off a quick 15-0 run to end the quarter up 20-8. And it was a rout from there on. Went on to win 60-42. There were just two bounces. The thing that really stood out with me about Pelham was these girls were basketball players. When you go to these smaller schools, 1A public, usually it's tough to find necessarily basketball players. They're just trying to fill out the roster, and you'll have some scrappy little guards like Telfair had. But Pelham, these were basketball girls that you could tell knew they were basketball players. They had size, big guards over there, Mahogany Randall, Destiny Thomas, all these girls, Alicia Camp, who was about 6'4 inside. These were basketball players, and they could play with a lot of higher classification teams. And it was just two bounds for them. Mahogany Randall ended up with 18 points, 6 rebounds. Mahogany Brown, 17 points and 7 rebounds. Camp had 13 points and 14 rebounds. And Destiny Thomas, who was a Region 1 Player of the Year, she had an off night. She was 1 of 10 from the field. Only had 5 points, but still contributed 10 rebounds and 8 assists and had a block. So Pelham really was just way too powerful for Telfair. Telfair came out of the gates firing from deep. They were 4 of 33 from beyond the arc, but definitely just not enough star power to hang in there with Pelham. India Wells was 9 of 27 from the field, 4 of 20 from beyond the arc. So she had 24 points and 8 rebounds, but the efficiency wasn't there. And Asia Howard, she was held to 2 of 9 shooting, 4 points. And Tashiana Rozier, 1 of 15 from the field, had, looks like just 2 points and 8 rebounds. So just not enough. And Pelham was definitely the class of that classification, and they really proved it, won their first state title since 1997.
And over on the boys' side of Class A public.
This is a really good one. I said going into this game, it was Clarence Jackson of Wilkinson County versus Rashawn Williams of Calhoun County. Jackson about 6'5 on the wing, Williams about 6'6 on the wing. And Wilkinson, it was not easy. It was a tough game for them, back and forth, kind of a slow start, but they finally grinded their way to a, I believe it's a, what, 9th state title under Dr. Aaron Jeter. After they were losing 34-29 at the half, they go on to win 66-53 over Calhoun County. Watching that game, the main takeaway was Rashawn Williams of Calhoun County. He looked great. He looked a lot better than when I saw him with the Georgia Stars over the summer. He looked much improved. He was super aggressive. But every single time he got the ball, he was always catching on the left wing, and he would get the ball, attack left, get to that left side of the basket, go baseline, and get to the foul line, or go down with the slam dunk, or finish at the rim. So he was, everything was on the left side. Then in that third quarter, Coach Jeter stuck his son, Aaron Jeter III, on him, and that really slowed him down. I don't think he even scored. He had maybe 2 or 4 points in that third quarter. He was very quiet. Then he came on strong in the fourth quarter, but Williams finished 8 of 21, 2 of 8 from 3, 7 of 11 from the foul line, 25 points, 8 rebounds, had 5 blocks as well. But he was like the best player on the court out there. He had that quiet third quarter, but then he turned it on early in the first 2 minutes of the fourth quarter. But Wilkinson just finds ways to win. Tylan Grable, 6'5" inside, garbage pail type kid. He really improved his stock with 15 points and 10 rebounds. And then Clarence Jackson, who got in foul trouble early trying to check Williams, he still managed to finish with 15 points, 12 rebounds, and he had a quiet game, but he still posted a double-double, still won his second straight state title to go into his senior season now with a lot of momentum behind him. And I was able to catch up with Clarence after the game and talk to him about how it all unfolded and how he was able to get the job done.
I'm here with Clarence Jackson. Sure. Got your second state title.
Yes, sir.
What was the game plan going into this game?
Just go out there, play hard, and give it all we got. And do a job with number five. He's a good player.
Yeah, so Rayshon Williams, I know he was getting you in foul trouble, giving you a lot of problems in that first half. What was the game plan to try and slow him down in the second half?
Everybody help off, do your job, and to try to contain him.
And how special is it to be a part of this program with their ninth state title at Wilkinson? That's a big deal, taking it back to the Palace there.
Man, we just go hard. Like, we go to practice every day, do what Jeter tell us to do, and we know ultimately we're going to win the championship. We do what we're supposed to do. It's right there every time, every year.
The night games at UGA on Wednesday were Class 5A girls and boys, respectively, and all season we've been talking about Buford, and boy, they didn't disappoint.
They did not disappoint at all. They really steamrolled Southwest DeKalb. It was not even a close game, really. 60-42. Of course, Buford coming off a 38-point semifinal win over Grifton, so there was probably no reason to expect anything else. But Tori Osment, a junior, really got them off on the right foot. She was great. The Wolves ended up shooting 6-12 from 3 in the first half, and Osment was 3-15 in that first half and had 15 points. She finished with 18 points, 7 rebounds, 6 assists, and 5 steals. Every time she took a shot, it looked like it was going in. Southwest DeKalb, really known for pressuring your guards and using some press, full-court press defenses to get in your head, but Osment was just handling the pressure and the every single trap just so easily, moved the ball up the court and really was able to spread the wealth around. So as a team, Buford knocked down 8 threes on the night, really just handled them pretty easily. She got some help from Tate Walters at 9 points, Jessica Nelson, 9.7 rebounds inside. She had a couple nice post moves around the basket. And Southwest DeKalb, Ugrona Uwasaba had 16 points, 16 rebounds going to Central Florida. She did her part, but not too much else was able to get it going. Jada Walton going to Texas A&M, 5-11 from the field, 13.6 rebounds. So it was just those two girls in double digits, not much else around them getting the job done. Kayla Benefield had 6 points, and that was her third leading scorer, and everybody else really struggled from the field there. They didn't even make a 3-point shot there. 0-6 from 3 and 6-15 from the foul line. So Buford really had their way with them with that balance attack. Everybody on the roster that got in the game except one player scored. And if you're looking at Southwest DeKalb, we had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 players only score. So Buford's balance really won out in this one.
And give us the Green Machines boys victory recap.
75-61. It's tough to beat a team 4 times, and they did just that. Buford knocked off Cedar Shoals in front of a great crowd. It was very crowded, a lot of orange, a lot of green there, close to Cedar Shoals, which is right in their backyard. And they were loud and proud and really supported their team. But once they got into the fourth quarter, Cedar Shoals really just kind of ran out of energy there. They were up 29-27 at the half and 36-34 after 3, but it really got away from them. There were 49 combined foul shots in the second half after there were 0 combined in the first half, and 38 of those free throw attempts went to Buford's way. So I know Drucker wasn't super thrilled about that. That's a pretty large discrepancy, but Cedar Shoals, they did everything they could. Flan Fleming, who's going to college, actually Charleston Southern, he had 30 points and 14 rebounds. He left his heart and soul out on the floor. It was a phenomenal performance in his last game. But other guys, I mean, Snipe Hall, very quiet with 5 points. He sat out, as did looks like DeMario Woe, who got a technical foul during that foul out. So they had two players foul out on the exact same play. He only had 2 points. Arthur Jones, 10 points, but he was 0-5 from deep. And see, as a team, Cedar Schultz was just 2 of 21 from deep, and that's a team that really relies on their three-point shot, and it just wasn't falling. And then you look at Buford, 25 of 38 from the foul line in that second half. Marcus Watson, who was named Player of the Year in Class 5A, he is something special. 27.7 rebounds. Was a little trigger happy from deep in that first half, but then once he was attacking downhill, they just had to keep fouling him. That's where he really posted his big numbers. Donnell Nixon, 13 points, 6 rebounds, hit 3 threes. David Beattie, a double-double of 10 and 10. And then Alex Jones, great, great court leader out there, great vision, 16 points, only 3 assists. He had a good game, and I was able to talk to Alex after the game and just ask him, really, how difficult is it to beat a team like Cedar Schultz 4 times?
With Alex Jones, this is more important than that, right? First state title in Buford history. Yep. You came over here from Alpharetta, and now you got this great dynasty about to start. How did it all work out?
I mean, we played hard all year. Cedar's a great team. We played them 3 times, 3 tough games. Man, we brought some kids in, and then we really came together as a team. And collectively, we really came together as a group, and we got it done.
And how difficult is it to beat a team 4 times?
It's insanely hard, as you see. I mean, first 2 games, they out-rebounded us. They played harder than us. We hit a bunch of threes. Beat them at their place twice. It's hard, I mean, but we got it
Day
done.
Day 2 of the GHSA Basketball Championships opened up with Class 3A at the University of Georgia. Give us the girls' recap.
Yeah, this was one of the craziest ones. We said Beach outscored Johnson 213 to 211 in the regular season, so every single game was nip and tuck and super close, and this one was a blowout from the very beginning. They jumped out, Beach that is, jumped out to a huge early lead, and they were up 30 points for much of the game, and they really never let Johnson into this one. It was Beach's first title since 2000. In the first half, they held Johnson to just 3 of 31 shooting, and you're not gonna win too many games when you're making just 3 of 31 shots. And it was 30-13 at the half. And, Beach really put them away. The score was closer than it really was. Beach ended up winning 59-44, but Beach was seriously up 30 points in the third quarter and early fourth quarter. It was an ugly game. Beach just attacked the glass. They punished them with 23 offensive rebounds. Out-rebounded Johnson 58-33. Judaisa Hills, 19 points and 12 rebounds. She was great. Jabrikia Bass, I thought she was excellent. 10 points, 14 rebounds, 5 assists. She was a bulldog, like the Beach Bulldogs are. She was a bulldog, just offensively, defensively, doing everything. And Madison Evans, a freshman guard, 14 points, and they really spreaded the sugar around, let everybody get involved. And if you're looking at Johnson, Alexis Pierce is going to Jacksonville. She was just 2 of 13 from the field, 6 points. Jemiah Cutter had 11 points. Bubbles Williams, 4 of 18, 12 points. It was just a nightmare game for them. They just could not throw the ball into the ocean. They were just way off the entire game. They had, 5 points in the first quarter, scored 8 in the second, 6 in the third, and then in the fourth quarter, that's when they finally broke through with 25 points. So that really tells you how much they were down this entire game before they started to make a little run at it. But Olivia Owens going to Iona, she came off the bench with that knee brace on. Then just 10 minutes into the game, she only played 10 minutes. She re-injured that knee and had to carry her off. See her with ice wrapped around her knee and crying. It was a sad scene to end a great career, but that's really just how the Adams Fashers day went. It was really tough sledding, 3 of 19 from the field and from 3-point line, and they really just got nothing going. Beach really was the dominator and set the tone in that game.
And on the boys' side of Class 3A?
In that game, we saw Pace and Morgan County, and Morgan County gave them everything they could handle. had a 2-point lead at the half, but at the end of the day, Hayes County has a 6'10 big guy going to Duke, and Morgan County didn't. Morgan County's all sophomores, and they put a great foot forward, back and forth game there until Pace took a hold of it and ended up winning 54-46. But that was a really good one. There were some big moments in that game, a couple runs there, a 7-0 run pushed the Knights lead to 45-37. But of course, Morgan County did not back away. Jamon Sims did a great job with those guys this year. That he made it an easy choice to pick him as coach of the year with all these sophomores. They probably weren't supposed to be in the state title game again, but they were right there with them. But at the end of the day, it was Wendell Carter, 20 points, 17 rebounds. Morgan County did a good job of him in the first half, played very physical with him. Everything was difficult. He had to earn it at the line. He was kind of struggling, 4 of 9 to start the game from the line, but ended 7 of 13 from the foul stripe there. No easy buckets. Wendell, he didn't get a lot of help outside of him. He got a little bit here and there, but nothing too major. He was the only guy in double figures for him. Isaiah Kelly really had a tough night, 2 of 9 from the field. 6 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists was a good thing. We had 6 turnovers. But timely shooting from Barrett Baker, Miles Todd knocked down some shots, and Mark Somerville, those guards combined for 20 points there, and that's what you need. Just piece it all together. And Morgan County, Tyron Lawrence had 11 points. Alex Woodard, he struggled. He was 0-7 from deep, and he's a guy that been known to knock down 5-6 threes every now and then if you give him an open look. He was only 3 of 16 from the field, 0-7 from deep at 13 points. But Stephen Green played really good for him, a spark plug, a scrappy little guard. He was flying around everywhere. He had 9 points in that game. But just not enough for Morgan County. And then after the game, I was able to catch up with assistant coach Greg Blythe of Pace Academy. Got to talk to him about how special it is to repeat and how incredible it was to coach a guy like Wendell Carter and really see his growth from a big guy with a lot of talent and a lot of potential to someone that actually put it all together and now is going to play for Duke in the ACC.
I am here with Greg Blythe, assistant coach, Pace Academy, 2-time state champion now. What was the game plan coming into this game at Morgan County? They were a very physical and defensive-minded bunch, but you were able to pull away late.
We just always hang our hat on defense. It looks like we held them to 46 points, which I think is substantially less than their average. Liberty County, 30 points less than their average. Westside, 30 points less than their average. Like everybody, we just hang our hat on defense. So as much as a struggle as it was, we were obviously trying to just pound it inside. They took the tactic to foul Wendell and just put him on the free throw line. He was struggling there early on, but again, we were just going to keep on punching it in.
And of course, getting the ball to Wendell, he's going to Duke for a reason. That's a great game plan. But how important is it for the Barrett Bakers, Miles Todds of the world to hit those threes to kind of loosen it up for you?
Miles played huge. He came in, gave us good pressure up at top on the 1-3-1, and then just being comfortable in the game and knocking them down. And not only just knocking them down, it's not about the make. They need to take it, because the take it allows us to have that offensive rebound opportunity. And then I think Isaiah Kelly, who struggled tremendously early on, he responded well and played a solid fourth quarter when it was time to get ready.
Final question, just how special was it coaching a guy like Wendell Carter, helping out on that staff and winning 2 titles with him?
He's just unbelievable. He's unbelievable off the court. I mean, he's made me a better coach, made me have more confidence as a coach, and just trust in my own process and routines that I do. And he's just the ideal person that you would ever want to be a part of. I can't wait to see his success in the future.
Day 2 of the GHSA basketball finals. The 6 and 8 o'clock games saw the 6A teams face off for the trophy. Two games I saw, and tell us how Kamaya Street and Mays was able to pull off a little bit of an upset over Harrison in the girls' final.
You're right about that. Yeah, that was the first game I got wrong, so I'll give you a recap on how I did with the predictions. But, yeah, Kamaya Street just took over that game. Mays held an early lead and really kind of nursed it the whole way through. Kamaya Street, 9 of 21 from the field, but she had 26 points, 6 rebounds, 4 assists. She's on the smaller side as a guard, but she is lightning quick, and she'll just get into the lane and flick it up over the rim and scored a bunch of points. Now, she got some help in the first half, definitely. Well, she was starting to get her footing. She had about 9 points in the first half there, but other people like Kendall Pack helped out. Looking at it, was Tori Hill had a nice game, 7 points, 9 rebounds. And if you get a little help from here and there, that's all you need with Street. She was just so good. Harrison, they did not give up. They kept playing well. They missed a lot of close shots early in the first half there. Mays was closing out very well on their shooters. They did end up shooting 6 of 18 from beyond the arc, but they did a good job. Sydney Wiggins was very quiet. She had a late three as time expired to make it a one-point game, but she was up 12 points after having a big game against Northview. Audrey Jordan, who's a player I really love, and she's got another year coming back. She was great, 13 points, 8 rebounds, 2 blocks, 2 steals. She was very good. She was their best player on the night. But just not enough for Kamiah Street. I was very surprised. I thought the balance would overwhelm Mays, but Mays came out and played great defense, and they out-rebounded Harrison 40-24. And 16 offensive rebounds right there to Harrison's just 5 rebounds. That was a big part of that game. But at the end of the day, Kamiah Street, she was a real deal. She was scoring nonstop there when her team needed her the most in the fourth quarter. And Harrison, if they had another minute left in that game, they might have been able to pull it out, but just ran out of time.
You know, you're right about who was able to play their style of basketball the best. You kind of knew Mays was going to come out and rely on the scoring burden of Kamiah Street, and she was able to do it. Harrison shooting a bit colder in the first half of the game than we saw it, and Mays was able to pull it out there at the end.
Yeah, that's it. Kamiah Street will carry the load if you get a little bit of help here and there. We'll piece together 6 points here, 8 points there, 7 points there. That was a recipe, but you got to give a lot of credit to Mays' defense. Their defense is what really kept them in the game early, got them out to a good lead, and then Street brought them home.
Give us a recap of the 6A boys' final.
Well, that was just an overwhelming performance in the fourth quarter. It was a really tight game, but Langston Hughes and Brunswick, the D1 guys, really just put their foot down and stepped on Brunswick's throat and really didn't let them get back into this game. Langston Hughes led 33-31 at the half. It was getting close. It was 47-44 going into the fourth quarter. Still an early, a nice little lead for Langston Hughes, just one bucket. But then in the fourth quarter, they outscored Brunswick 26-8. 73-52 was the score. Langston Hughes with their first state title. Landers Knoll, it was a little cold to open up the game, but at the end of the night, again, 26 points, 6 rebounds, 11 of 12 from the foul line, 7 of 12 from the field, so he was very efficient. Him and Derek Cook, they really started doing what they do best in that fourth quarter, combining for 16 points. They really put him away. Cook had 19 points, 7 rebounds, 4 assists. Then Richard Matthews, who stepped up big throughout the state tournament run, had 14 points. And for Brunswick, Derek Lampkin scored all 10 of his points in that second half there. Marcus Scott hit 3 threes in the first half, got Brunswick off to a good start, cooled off in the second half, finished with a team-best 14 points. And Kamani Dunham just wasn't enough of a factor inside at 6'8", had 10 points, 8 of them in the first half. Didn't really do too much, didn't get too many touches in the second half there. But he was supposed to be able to really cause some problems for Langston Hughes, but he was unable to. And after the game, of course, I had to talk to Rory Welsh, who was named Coach of the Year in Class 6A after taking his 3-seeded Panthers all the way to the Promised Land. I got to talk to him about Landers Nolley, Richard Matthews, and just this entire journey and how it all started for Langston Hughes to really come to fruition and cap it off with a great state title victory.
Wow.
I am here with state championship winning head coach Rory Welsh of Langston Hughes. How does that sound, first of all?
Sounds great. It sounds unbelievable.
Could you just tell me about the journey? Let's just start there.
Oh, Lord, the
third
journey.
Third seed out of Region 5?
The journey starts before that. I mean, this group of kids I have now, these 2017 seniors, you know, we got them as eighth graders. You know, literally in February of their eighth grade year back in 2013. We started going down there and picking them up and bringing them to the school to work out and preparing them for the first summer league going into the freshman year. So the journey started way before this season, and it's just awesome to see it all come full circle and pay off for us in the state championship.
And how was it? You guys were road warriors this entire state tournament trip, no home games, and you brought a great crowd tonight, got the job done.
It kind of carried over from the regular season because early on in the year, we wanted to go through the gauntlet in terms of playing on the road and playing quality competition. You know, we played a schedule most people won't play, early in the year. We played McEachern. You know, we played Henry County. You know, we played the first game of the season versus Gainesville. I mean, we were going out there, putting ourselves out there to see what we were made of and also to prepare us for this part of the year. And it actually worked. So I guess somebody's a genius.
Could you talk about kids stepping up? You know, you lose some guys along the way, injuries and other stuff like that. People like Richard Matthews.
Richard Matthews has been a guy. He's a four-year guy in our program. Came from Renaissance Middle School, one of these 2017 kids we've been working with for almost 5 years. He came into the season hobbled by a little knee injury. It took him a while to get back in shape and into playing condition. And, when his number was called, that young man was ready. He has won us, at least four or five games in this 7-8 game stretch since he's been thrust in the starting lineup. He's just played out of his mind, as you see tonight. I mean, the kid just, he was ready, and hopefully we'll get something for him going forward.
Thoughts on Landers and Ollie?
Hey, he's the best shooting guard in the country, man. If you don't know, you better get to know. The kid, man, first off, everyone knows what he does offensively in terms of shooting, handling, putting the ball in the cup, and what he can do with the ball, but the kid is a worker. Let's just start there. He is what he is because of his work ethic, because of his preparation, because of his foundation with his family. And, it's just a testament to the time they put in. And he's a coach's dream.
And we all know Langston Hughes can score the ball, but the game changed. Fourth quarter, defense clamped down. How'd you do it?
We stopped gambling, and we finished defensive plays with rebounds. We got into a thing there. We were fingertipping the ball, and they'd gotten, loose balls and putbacks. And, we finally kind of barreled down and finished the plays with defensive rebounds. And our activity up top was a lot better in our three-quarter court zone press. And, we kind of got some runouts and got numbers.
Congratulations, buddy.
Carl, in these championship games, you always talk about, especially in the NBA, you got to perform, you got to execute in the fourth quarter. And when you outscore a team 26-8 in the fourth quarter of a tight game, you can't expect anything but to win.
Yeah, that was it. You win games with championship defense, and that's what they did. They won that title really just clamping down in the fourth quarter. And Langston Hughes, we all knew Langston Hughes, they can definitely score the ball. But they got some stops when they needed to, and it got ugly. Once it got up and down to a little bit of a track meet there in the fourth quarter, Brunswick had no answer at all, and the D1 guys really won out. Derek Cook and Landers Noah just put on a show.
On your advice, I made my way down to Georgia Tech for day three of the GHSA basketball championships. The first game up on the docket was the single A private girls championships.
That was a very good one. Holy Innocents, I thought they were going to do it. They were up the entire game, but then Wesleyan took their first lead with a minute 56 left. And that was all she wrote, 51-48. Wesleyan finds a way to bite Holy Innocents in the championship game. Michaela Coombs had a very good game, 17 points, 9 rebounds. She didn't get too crazy off. She was kept in check for the most part. But she hit some big buckets down the stretch when needed. Natalie Armstrong, a physical post presence inside. She played very well for Wesleyan with 11 points and 13 rebounds. And they just got the job done. Holy Innocents was stunned when they saw that lead evaporate. They had a nice early lead, double digits, led by 17 with halfway through the second quarter. And that slowly and slowly and slowly dwindled away. And, it was crazy. Wesleyan coming out on top. Holy Innocents got a pretty good performance from Kennedy Suttle, 16 points and 13 rebounds. Kayla Hubbard had 14 points, hit 3 threes, 4 rebounds, 4 assists. And Kayla Pointer, she didn't have a great game going to LSU. She was just 3 of 13 from the field, 10 points. Wasn't able to affect the game too much, did have 4 assists. But other than that, didn't do too much out there. And if she has a little bit of a better game, plays a little bit more like herself. Holy Innocence probably wins that one. And then Shy Blanding, she went 0-for, just took 3 shots. She had no points. She's a nice little point guard I like over there that can get the offense going. But got to give credit to Wesleyan. They took Holy Innocence's best punches throughout the game and was able to rope-a-dope them and found a way to come up big in the final 2 minutes of the game and really stunned Holy Innocence.
Unfortunately, in the 1A Private Boys Championship, that game was not as close, pretty much over at halftime.
Yeah, that game got away from Southwest Atlantic Christian very quickly. They lost 81-57 in another blowout fashion to Green Force. Florida signee DeAndre Ballard, just not a good way to go out on his career. He comes in averaging 27 points per game. He was going to have to go off for at least about 30 points to give Southwest Atlantic Christian a shot, but he was in foul trouble, fouled out in the fourth quarter, finished with 12 points, 5 rebounds, and 6 turnovers. He did not play that great. Isaiah Cotton had a nice game for Southwest Atlanta, had 16 points, and Jonathan King, he turned a couple heads. 3 of 10 from the field, 0 of 3 from deep, but 6 of 10 from the foul line, had 12 points, 6 rebounds, and 5 assists, and had a monster dunk over Mo Abdul-Salam, which really got people intrigued with him. So a couple of college coaches were asking, who is this unsigned senior after the game? So King had a very nice showing on the big stage, but just way too much Green Force, too much size. But again, it was Justin Force, guy who was hurt early in the season, missed a lot of games. That's when they took a majority of those 8 losses. He goes off, brought him into the sunset in style. 36 points, was 9 of 15 from the field, 5 of 10 from deep, 13 of 15 from the line. He killed Southwest Atlantic Christian in all their meetings, so we talked about that in the preview of this game, and he saved his best showing for last, those big 36 points. Jaden Duggan pitched in 14 points, and everybody else was pretty balanced. Get 6 points here, 8 points there. Really just spreading the wealth around, and Ike Abiagu, no points in this final game, but 10 rebounds and 4 blocks. Pretty much sums up his career as a great rim protector. And there was just there was no way Southwest Atlantic Christian, once they saw that deficit go to 10 points, no way they were going to be able to hang around with Green Force, especially with how good Justin Forrest was playing. And I was able to talk to Larry Thompson, who now goes 2-for-2 in state championships. So just in his second year, he's already won state championships back-to-back seasons. So that's a pretty good start now if you win a state title in every single year. So I was able to talk to him about coaching Justin Forrest and coaching the big guys and just really putting Green Force on the map.
So I'm here with Larry Thompson.
Yes, sir.
2-time state championship winning coach, 2-for-2 now,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, 2-for-2.
How difficult is it to repeat a state champs?
It's tough, especially when you got a veteran group. Then sometimes they can get a little unfocused or get a little lax, and you have to dial them in and reel them in every day. Soccer came out and played. They wanted it just as bad as we wanted it. They were great. The first 2 times we played them, we kind of had our way with them early in the basketball game, but they wouldn't be denied that first half. So, we went into the locker room and spoke about defense, and I depended upon my senior leadership today, and they didn't disappoint.
And how important was it to stop a guy like DeAndre Ballard going to Florida? He fouls out. I don't even think he cracked. He had 12 points, but you did a great job on it.
That was the key. If you could have saw the board starting the basketball game, we hold him to under 15. We win the basketball game going away. First time we played him, we won the basketball game, but he had 22, 23 points. He had his way in the fourth quarter. Second time, kind of resembled this one. That was the key all week, and we had 5 or 6 guys that we mimic him all day in practice, and when he touched it, we wanted to run a second guy at him because we know he made them go for years. He's a great, great kid, great, great athlete, and he's going to be special down in Florida next year.
And when everybody thinks about Green Force, I think about Ike, all the 7-footers.
Yeah.
But the engine, Justin Force, 36 points in his final game.
You 36 is what he had? Jeez, I didn't know he had 36. That kid was special. It's been like that for a long time with Green Force. The only thing you do is see is the height. You see the big guys. But John Noguchi last year, year before that, Justin Ravenel. Our guards have been the engine that made us go for a number of years. Having that size is great, but if anybody know basketball, you know our guards push the tempo and help our guys get easy shots because we wasn't very, very great on the low block today. Ike fumbled a couple balls, didn't finish. Muhammad came in, first game he played in months from a broken hand. He was great, posting deep, getting post touches, and putting the ball in the basket. But he didn't score that well either. So we had to have David Quinman. We had to have Justin Ford. We had to have Zandon be themselves. Because we had a focus of going inside to try to limit what they do. You know, they're not very, very deep inside. But we didn't have a great day inside. But Justin Ford, geez, 36. I didn't know he had 36. That kid was great. That kid was unbelievable.
And you're 2 for 2. How do you make it 3 for 3?
Work. My young guys, they been around. They see what it takes to be a champion. They understand the work ethic. They come to practice and get their behinds beat every day from the Ikeys and the Bay. So they got some toughness. We just got to put the pieces together and see what we got here come June. I'm already looking ahead because this thing doesn't stop like a year-round thing now. Get out and watch these guys on the AAU circuit and figure out what they're doing good and how we can put a team together around the guys we got coming back.
Even though that 4 o'clock game may not have been as competitive as some would have liked to see, the 4A finals definitely were. You weren't lying about the atmosphere there. Let's start it off with maybe two of the best games, especially championship games, I may have ever seen in the state of Georgia. Columbus taking on Carver Columbus in the 4A girls final.
That was an instant classic, possibly and most likely probably the best game of the entire week. Columbus edges their rival, Carver Columbus, 69-67. Now, Columbus was up big in this one. I mean, they're up 21-9 at the end of the first quarter. I told you, I'm going to start writing my game story. Going to get ahead of this, get all ready for the Upson Lee St. Pius game. And it did not work out that way. Columbus was up 15 points in the third quarter, and they were really taking it to Carver. But the moment everything changed, was when Ariah Copeland of Alabama, 6'3 post presence, she went down with an ankle injury at that 2:46 mark. And when she went down, they were up, I guess it was 10 points. And then that's when the crazy run happened. Yeah, they were up 52-42 with 2:46 left. And then here comes the Tigers on a 14-4 run. Alicia Reese and Maria Igus going off, and it was wild. But the player that really stepped up was just a sophomore, Janaya Love Hill. She had 25 points for Carver Columbus and was really leading this comeback. Well, Igus gave you 15 points, Reese gave you 13 points. So the great guards finally got loose once Copeland went down with the injury. And in overtime, it was scary. It looked like Columbus was about to blow this one. Joe Cerrone wasn't going to be able to get that ring. And they needed some late-game heroics. And who else would you expect for some late-game heroics than Tatiana Wyatt, who is just a superstar, going to Kentucky. She was phenomenal. Hit a 3 with 9 seconds left in the corner to really stun Carver and reclaim that lead for good, 69-67. She finished with 27 points, 16 rebounds, 4 assists, 5 blocks and 1 steal, and just seeing a 6'2 forward that dominates the glass like that step outside and coolly hit a 3-pointer in the corner to win the game, that was just the money shot dagger right there. Excellent game from her. Copeland, she got that injury and never came back in, but she still finished with 12 points and 8 rebounds and 2 blocks. But it was just a great game. Brittany Floyd, she produced 11 points, 3 rebounds, 2 assists, had 8 turnovers, but she did a couple nice things out there just helping the scoring load out. But a great game from Tatiana White. She was phenomenal. And then Trinity Vasquez, she had 9 points and 6 rebounds. She hit some big free throws in overtime. But all eyes turned to Tatiana White. She was incredible, and that game winner in the corner was a great way to send her off to college.
You know, this was really a game of 3.5 quarters. I'm looking in my notes. In the third quarter, Columbus was up 43-30. They actually went into the stall with 2 minutes left in the third. With 3:09 left in the fourth, the lead was cut to 10. And then all of a sudden, you see this resurgence. The gym was electric. One of the, I think, the coolest things, the Upson Lee student section and the St. Pius student section started cheering on one of the teams based on what baseline they were arranged on. You know, the three started hitting. There was a reinvigorated full-court press that Columbus came out on that helped get them into OT. Just a great game all around.
You're right about that. Yeah, we had Upson Lee supporting Columbus. We had St. Pius in the all-white supporting Carver Columbus on that comeback. But that was everything basketball's supposed to be about. It. For me, we got a pretty nice 4A game we should talk about next on the boys' side.
Indeed. Upson Lee taking on St. Pius. We alluded to it earlier, and that was somewhat similar to the girls' game and how the storyline shook out.
I told you that the city of Thomaston would bring the entire town. St. Pius brought the entire school. We had a sellout of McCamish Pavilion, a legit sellout. The fire marshals had to close the door. There were zero, when I say zero seats, there were zero seats available. We had the upper deck all the way filled up. We had people standing on the railing everywhere. It was incredible. And this was a good game. Upson Lee was up 15 early. They took a 27-14 lead at the half. And St. Pius was kind of, just hanging around in the water. But then Everett Lane caught fire in that second half. He finished with 29 points, 5 rebounds, with 7 of 15 from 3. He was incredible. He was just out of his mind, carrying St. Pius back into this game. And while he was doing that, Upson Lee was taking some body blows, but Trayvon Walker, big sophomore, he had 9 points, 16 rebounds, and 4 blocks. He did a great job keeping his hands straight up and altering shots and gobbling up rebounds. But when he got into a little bit of foul trouble there in that third quarter, that's when the floodgates opened. Now, it doesn't really make sense. A big guy was going out, and now he started knocking down all these threes. I don't really know, but that's kind of been a thing for Upson Lee, where everything's clicking on all cylinders. It's going fine, but you take out one key cog of that machine, it gets a little iffy there. But they were able to weather the storm, and they were able to hold on against them. And that was, Ty Fagan, 20 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 blocks, hit a 3 to open up the game, and he was able to craft his way through. They handled that St. Pius full court press pretty well for the most part, but St. Pius, they would not die. They would keep coming back, and every time it looked like Upson Lee was finally ready to put them out of the game, here they would come, a 6-point game, a 4-point game. But again, just like the Harrison girls, St. Pius ran out of time and ran out of bullets, and Upson Lee was able to make enough free throws. They were 12-19 from the line, and they survived a wild, wild barrage from Everett Lane, a junior who rose his stock incredibly, but he had 29 points in that loss. But at the end of the night, it was Upson Lee finishing off the season undefeated, a perfect 32-0, bringing home the first title over to Upson Lee. It was an incredible game and the best atmosphere you could ever hope to see in the state of Georgia. That was what state championships should all be about.
Indeed.
I was able to catch up with Ty Fagan after the game. I talked to him about what it meant to the community. And then after that, I was able to catch up with Coach Aaron Parr. He was on the losing end of things, but even he was able to say, wow, this is a special environment to play in front of.
I'm here with the newest state champion from Upson Lee, first championship victory in school history, Ty Fagan. Ty, what does it mean to you and the community of Thomaston to win this title?
It's amazing, Bennett. It's the first school title. I mean, it's been a test. It's been a quest. It's been hard. I mean, we had teams to test us throughout the season to prepare us for this, but it's amazing.
And did you use last year's early exit as fuel to the fire this year, lost in the first round after you had about 18 straight wins?
Always. Anything that's not a championship is a loss. Then we had people telling us what we couldn't do. Like, people that's supposed to be from Thomaston, was against it. They counted us out, so we had to prove them wrong.
You got off to a pretty good start in the first half. Then third quarter, St. Pius clamped down on you. Buckets got tough to come by. Then in the fourth quarter, you kind of got back into the lane, found your stroke again. What changed there in that fourth quarter?
Third quarter, we kind of lost communication. We stopped talking on defense so much, they would get open shots. Number 3, he's a good shooter. Good shooter, teammate, setting him up. But fourth quarter, we started back to talk like we did in the first half. We shut him out.
And then what about Trayvon Walker inside? He's only a baby. He's only a sophomore, but 16 rebounds, countless blocks. He was huge. And when he went on that bench, that's when St. Pius made that run.
That's true. He's a big part of our defense. He take up a lot of space. He gets you defensive rebounds, offensive rebounds. Like, he contest shots. He's a big part of our defense.
And then what's next for you personally? We got the AAU circuit coming up. Still going to be with the Middle Georgia Supersonics?
Yes, sir. It's just a matter of staying focused, grinding, getting better every day.
Thank you. I'm here with Coach Parr. Obviously, the score and the result wasn't what you wanted, but how proud are you of your team?
I'm so proud of them. We were at one point in the season, we were 6-5 and had lost a couple games in overtime, and we're playing a lot of young guys and just didn't really have an identity. And then all of a sudden, we just figured it out. We matured. We grew up. We started playing for each other. And I'm so, so proud of how far they've come. We hadn't been here since 1992, so first time in 25 years. And I think these guys left a great legacy for the school, and they're all really good kids, so I'm proud of them.
And what do you think about playing in front of an atmosphere like that, only like 15 minutes away from St. Pius? Thomaston, the entire city was there, sold out. It was incredible.
You know, the Upson Lee won the game, and they did a great job, but the other winner of that game was high school basketball fans, because that was just an unbelievable high school basketball atmosphere, and I haven't seen anything quite like it, selling out Georgia Tech. I mean, that's just amazing. It's something that our guys are going to look back on one day with so much pride. And for high school basketball in this great state, I mean, that's what it deserves, a sellout crowd in a premier venue, and that was a lot of fun.
And have you ever seen or coached a player and see what Everett Lane did, just catch fire like that and wheel your team back into the game? How incredible was that?
He, in the second half, I'll tell you what, I think he finished with 29 points. Most of those were in the second half. And I'm telling you what, he is a big-time competitor. That's what he is. He is just a big-time competitor, and he is fearless. And he epitomizes fearlessness. And just proud of him for stepping up and helping us try to make a run to come back.
And was there anything specifically that Upson Lee did that kind of hurt you guys, or you just couldn't get over the hump? Anything game plan?
Yeah, I just thought Upson Lee did a really great job defensively of getting out on our shooters in the first half. We got some shots, but I didn't feel like they were clean looks. In fact, one of them even got blocked. And then with 23 in the middle, I'm drawing a blank on his name, but what a amazing defensive game he had. I thought just his rim, shot altering and rim protecting ability, and our guys went in there fearless, but at some point we had to switch it up because he was just a wall. And I thought that was a key for them, as he did a really good job on defense in particular.
And I know it hurts right now, but how excited are you for next year? You have a bunch of these guys coming back. So does Upson Lee.
Yeah.
It's going to be fun next year, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think we could maybe see them for the next couple of years, in the state playoffs, depending on what round, how the brackets fall. But I'm really excited for our guys. I hope that they learned a lot from, being here and getting that experience. And you're right, we got 12 guys coming back. And I'm also really proud of our seniors, because even we only had three and only one of them started, and one of them really wasn't in the rotation, but they were the best leaders for our young guys. They totally bought in. They were unselfish, and I think that says a lot, and I think a lot of people should follow that example. They sacrificed playing time for the team, and because of that, we get to, not the banner we want, but we get to put a banner up because of their leadership.
Thank you.
You know, if you weren't there at the 4A finals, I think you really missed out. The environment just can't be understated. The game lived up the hype that the environment created. But nevertheless, on to the final day of the GHSA championships on Saturday, the 2A girls.
Yes, this was another one. Laney was up big. They were just taking it to Raven too quick. It was 24-18 at the end of one. Laney was up, but then Laney really extended that lead, made it, 46-30, up 16 points, their largest lead of the game. But Raven County, after making no threes in the first half, bang, 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 they start getting hot. Haley Reeves, Brooke Henricks, shots start dropping, and they start putting a scare into Laney, and they really cut it close a couple times. They had one or two possession games, it was a great effort from Laney there to really try and hold off Raven County. It was 68-63 at one point. They just would not go away, Raven. They were just so feisty, ended up in six threes on the night. But it was just too much. Deshaun Benjamin, the best player on the floor, won that game. 25 points, 11 rebounds, 5 assists, 5 blocks, 2 steals. Jaden Hamilton had 22 points, 13 rebounds. Aubriana Bonner, 16 points and 10 rebounds. So Laney, they hurt him on the glass, 53-33. But Raven County, they did not go away. T.D. Diller did a great job with those girls this year. Hallie Reeves, 20 points. Brooke Hemricks, she fouled out. She had 17 points. Savannah Scott finishes her career with 10 points, 7 rebounds. Georgia Stockton, 11 points. And then Lakin Stiles, a youngster off the bench with 10 points. And that was just a great game. That looked like it could get out of hand. It was going to be a blowout. But you got to give credit to Raven County to come back and make it close. But at the end, Laney was able to get by him 85-76.
And what happened on the boys' side of the ball of Class 2A?
Well, a 22-2 third quarter really wrecked the party, and my walk of all the classifications, South Atlanta looked pretty dang on good. They pounded Swainsboro 68-33. Swainsboro just plays 5 guys, 6 guys tops. You can't do that. You're going to run out of gas against a team like South Atlanta. And that's exactly what happened. Tyler Thornton inside, 11 points, 14 rebounds, 4 assists, 4 blocks. He was good. Jalen Stiegel gave you 15 points, 7 rebounds, 4 assists. Jalen McKinney for Swainsboro entered that game averaging 27 points per game, but he was 6-21 from the field, had 15 points, playing under the weather. Justin Harris, one of his second leading scorers on the team, he was 0-for-12 on the night, did not score a point. And South Atlanta really cruised 68-33. And I was able to talk to Devontae Pullins after the game. He finished with a team-best 20 points on the night, and he was talking about how all these kids have just been playing since they were 4 years old. So the senior class really going out on top after playing together throughout the years, and that's a great thing to see with high school basketball, seeing these kids playing together through the ranks and then finally their final year on the court.
I am here with Devonta Pullins. You guys just won first state title since 2009. What happened there? I know in the third quarter everything changed, outscored them 22-2. How did you guys turn on the switch like that?
We're a team. We fight every time. Every time, every game. We together. We fight all the way through. No matter what, can't nobody put us down, get in our head or nothing. We keep each other up the whole time, and that's how we win games.
Well, can you talk about the rest of that senior class? You guys been playing each other for a while now?
Oh, we've been playing with each other since 4 years old. We love each other, man. We play hard every game. We a family. We family.
And how sweet is it to finish the drill, your final season here, get a state championship?
Exciting. It's exciting. I don't have no words for that. So it's too exciting. I can't really say nothing about that right now.
And what's next for you? College level, what's going on there?
College level basketball, man. College level basketball. Hope to get the next level and succeed at it. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Alright. I guess we saved the largest classification in the state for last. Give us what happened in the 7A girls' final.
Well, North Coast had an early lead on McKeacher, a nice, comfortable 22-15 lead after the end of the first quarter. But it was an onslaught from Georgia signee Q Morrison, had 22 of her 24 points in that first half. McKeacher and the draw them close. And then in the second half, North Coast did a good job on Morrison, held her to just those 2 points. But McKeacher wins championships. It feels like an annual thing now, and that's a four-peat for him. Got past Norcross 75-68. Morrison, like I mentioned, 24 points. Lindsay Wilby, who's going to Texas Tech, had 13.6 rebounds. And Jules Smalls had 13.6 rebounds. But the big difference maker in the fourth quarter was Victoria Agin had 13 points. All 13 of her points came in the fourth quarter. And she really picked up the slack for McKeacher when Morrison was struggling with foul trouble and wasn't finding the bottom of the net. It was Agin who came on strong, 13 points, 19 minutes played. She was a difference maker there. And for Norcross, they got 23 points from South Florida signee Vanessa Block, and she had a great showing in our final game. Really proved well. She's a big-time D1 player. Taylor Mason going to Miami had 17 points and 8 rebounds. And Tiana Carter had 10 and 10. But Tia Lyons is going to be at Pittsburgh. She's only a junior this year. She was held to just 4 points and 3 rebounds, so she wasn't able to really affect the game too much. But it was Victoria Agin that was really the one that Norcross probably didn't have too much of a game plan for. Especially in the fourth quarter, you think Morrison's going to get their shots, but Agin was the one that really got the key over the hump.
And in the 7A boys final, the last game that was played for the 2016-17 season in the state of Georgia, the last game you'll get to recap, the last game we covered, and really to cap off a season of exciting basketball, Tiff County made one of the best, if not the best, playoff run in history.
When a season where super teams were all the rage and unpredictability was everything you could ask for, Tiff County shocked Norcross 55-52. This is the greatest state championship run in the state of Georgia in history, and I don't want to hear South Georgia trying to say I'm knocking them or anything like that. We expect this. This is the greatest upset tournament run-wise in history. When you beat three nationally ranked teams, you beat Newton, you beat Keechee, you beat Norcross in the championship game, that is the greatest run ever. And I say this is the greatest run ever because you do have a big man going to Virginia Tech, and you do have a guard going to Alabama State, but you don't have all these ACC, SEC just loaded super teams. You only played 6 players, and you were able to beat all these great teams. So this is the greatest run in state history. Tiff County 55, Norcross 52. P.J. Horn going to Virginia Tech. Only had 4 points and 5 rebounds. He had an offensive putback up in the game, but after that, he did not do anything. He really struggled against Rayshon Hammond, 6'8", and Lance Thomas, 6'9", and 5. Really gave him fits. He was just 2-12 from the line, but it was Kid County's free throw shooting, 24 of 26 on the game, 21 of 22 in the fourth quarter with Micah Johnson, who's going to Alabama State, was 16 of 18 from the line and scored 17 of his game-high 24 points in that fourth quarter. He finished with 24 points, 9 rebounds, and 4 assists. He was just everything for him. Rashawn Bateman, a great football player, and hit timely threes throughout the state tournament. Did it again in the championship game. 4 of 10 from deep, had 18 points. With Tiff County, they wanted a ugly, slow, defensive-minded game, and they mucked it up against Norcross and had it low scoring, and they got the job done. Rayshon Hammond's going to Georgia for Norcross. He's up to 8 points and 8 rebounds in his final game. 2 of 11 shooting, he fouled out. Lance Thomas had a very good game. He was showing off the jump shot, but he had 13 points, just 4 rebounds. And then Dalvin White was hitting from deep early on in the game, kind of quieted off until the fourth quarter. He had 15 points. So it was a frantic finish. JoJo Toppin with the and-one dunk to cut it to 1 point, but every single time Norcross had to foul, it was Micah Johnson with ice water in his veins when he completed the greatest state tournament run in Georgia history. And I was able to talk to P.J. Horn after the game, just talk about how this all happened, how do you slay all these giants en route to a title championship. And he had some good stuff to say, and it was a lot of fun talking to him and talking to a guy. Didn't get the job done in the championship game, but he was the horse that Coach Holland rode that entire season, and he got him there, and then there was his teammates that really finished out the drill and get him a state title.
Tiff County just completes the most historic state tournament run in Georgia high school history. You guys weren't supposed to beat Berkmont. You're not supposed to beat Newton. You're not supposed to beat McEachern. You sure as hell aren't supposed to beat Norcross. How'd you guys do it?
Well, first, we've been hearing this all year long, that we're not good enough. We're too little. We're not strong enough. We're not old enough. We're not experienced enough. But it's not all about that. It's all about being strong, trusting in the good Lord above to get the job done.
And then, how was it battling against some other guys you're going to see in the ACC? Lance Thomas, Louisville, you're going to Virginia Tech.
It felt
some big bodies, huh?
It felt pretty good because I done played with them all my life. I know how they are. I know they're skill level.
Can you talk about Rashad Bateman, who else we got? Micah Johnson, all these animals. Talk about those guys.
My brother, they done worked with me all year long. I know what they can do. I know what, in my heart, I know they had my back.
And then, final question. First year in the program, what'd you do? You want to say title? Last year in the program.
State championship. Title. It's an unbelievable feeling right now.
Perfect, huh?
Unbelievable feeling right now.
Congratulations.
So, looking ahead on the horizon for you, Kyle, what's next? I know on your website, sandyspiel.com, you've had your All-State teams released. I've really had to restrain myself here and not try to bring up some of the controversy that stirred up. I'll let you deal with that on your own. But what can we expect coming from you?
Well, as you mentioned, All-State teams came out on my website. I do as much research as anybody in the state, so I do my best I can to make it as fair as possible. I'm not here to curry favor to anybody. I'm not here to bow down and kiss rings just because someone is a five-star guy over someone that's a no-star guy. I'm here to give it to the best players, in my opinion, best high school players, not necessarily the best college players. So that's something that you have to wrap your head around, best high school players. So that was a lot of fun trying to piece it all together. And now, since we have the summer and everything, I'll be on the circuit tracking down as many sleeper teams, sleeper players as possible, try and find out next year's ups and leads, who are these teams, homegrown teams that have been playing year-round. Would it all come to fruition during the high school season? It's always fun to try and track out these guys and project and see what happens. That's a real fun time. Players are made in the off season. Teams are made in the season, and that's where state titles are won. So it's a real year-round thing. And I just want to thank everybody for listening to the podcast. I hope you enjoyed the state championship preview. We went 13-3 on my picks, on my three losses, which was Harrison losing to Mays. I picked Holy Innocence to beat Wesleyan, and then I struck out on Tift County and Norcross. But those three losses were by a combined 7 points. So going 13-3, I think that's a decent showing, so at least trying to gain some credibility for everybody out there listening. But I just want to thank everybody for listening. Ramin, I really want to thank you for helping put the podcast and everything together. I wasn't able to do it without you. You've been a great moderator, and I really appreciate everything you've done for the podcast.
It's been my pleasure working with you, Kyle, over the past, really this season of basketball. I hope... I'm going to echo some of Kyle's sentiments here. I want to thank everyone who's been watching, visiting the site, giving us support. I really hope we've been able to bring you a product, bring you some information each week in a palatable format that's helped you be more informed about basketball in the state of Georgia. I know we've enjoyed covering basketball, and I hope you've enjoyed watching it across the state this year.
Yeah, it's been a ton of fun. And for everybody, me and Ramin might jump on the podcast every now and then, if there's any big news coming out of Georgia high school basketball. Heck, I know we're going to have a lot of transfers this offseason. Maybe we'll do some transfer podcasts or something like that. But we'll try and keep everybody in the loop, spieling and dealing. We'll continue to roll on in some facet when we hit these dog days of summer. And it should be a fun time. And with me, I just want to thank you again. I hope everything's going well for you. Over there at Northview, we got a big prom season coming up, and I know you're going to have the best prom proposal around. So I just want to thank you again, and thank you.